I'm Ken Jones, local historian, born at the Stocking, Little Dorley. Today, I'm going to accompany you on the Dorley Heritage Trail. I'll give you trail directions and tell you about the history of the heritage sites on the trail. The trail starts as you exit the car park on Station Road. Turn right and walk towards the junction. If you look to your left, you will see a row of new houses. The site of Dorley's old police station was here, opposite the junction with Station Road and Burton Street. Cross the road and walk to this site. Site 1A. The old police station stood directly opposite Station Road and was built by 1856 and was closed in 1976. This replaced the lock-up on King Street, which was built by 1843 and sold in 1872. Look to your right. As the road bends around and becomes Dorley Road, if you look along this road, on the right-hand side, roughly halfway along the side of the car park, is where the Cozy Cinema was located. Site 1B. The Cozy Cinema was Dorley's first. The Royal appeared later and was quite an event in the life of the town. Erected in 1921, made of corrugated iron sheets, with an imitation half-timbered plastered front, it was, in fact, a former cinema transported from the army camp at Prees Heath. It stood directly opposite the Royal Exchange Public House and was closed in 1956 before being demolished. One personal memory here is with regards to the Cozy Cinema. I well remember that the male inmates from the Madeley Workhouse on a Saturday afternoon would be brought in line, about eight or a dozen of them, with the assistant workhouse master at the rear, taking them up from the workhouse to the Cozy Cinema on a Saturday afternoon. They were all dressed in a blue serge suits and hobnail boots, and of course at that time the admission to the Cozy Cinema in the front of the cinema was one penny. Continue along Burton Street, past Dorley House, where the parish offices are located on your left, and into Dorley High Street. On the left is Priest's Shoe Shop. This is the oldest family business in Dorley High Street. Site 1C. Priest's Shop has the distinction of being the oldest business operating in Dorley High Street, having been in the same premises for over 150 years, as old as the High Street name itself. Continue along the High Street, a little further down from the shoe shop, and on the right-hand side is a building with a clock and three arches. This is the site of the Market Hall. Site 1D. Constructed in 1867, the Market Hall was a handsome building of red brick with arcaded facade, vaults underneath, and a turret with bell and clock. The bell and clock was a gift of the town by Lieutenant Colonel William Kenyon Slaney, who was described as Lord of the Manor. The building's facade has been changed over the years and the bell tower removed, and today the Market Hall functions as separate shops. Further along the High Street, there is a supermarket on the right. If you look to your right, you will see a building called Matthew Webb House, which used to be the entrance to Chapel Street, and the site of the Methodist Chapel was to the left of Chapel Street. Site 1E. The Wesleyan Methodist Chapel, built in 1860, and a fine example of Victorian polychrome brickwork, was a prominent feature of the High Street until its demolition in 1977. It was erected on the site of an earlier, smaller, but unusual octagonal Wesleyan chapel of 1819. The Victorian polychrome building of 1860 was designed by Robert Griffiths, and if you visited Bridge North, you would see another example of his work in the old Market Hall at Bridge North, which also is polychrome brickwork and is identical virtually to the former chapel here in Dorley. Continue down the High Street. On the left-hand side, you'll see Lloyd's Pharmacy. This used to be the site of Bemrose's chemists, where Edith Pardage, the novelist Ellis Peters, worked for a while. Site 2A. Bemrose's chemists was where the author Edith Pardage worked as an assistant for 7 years until the start of the Second World War, when she joined the Royal Navy. During her time at a chemist's, Edith Pardage, who wrote under the pseudonym Ellis Peters, started writing seriously for publication. Her chemist work enabled her to collect useful information on medicines, which she drew upon when writing her brother Cadfael's stories. One interesting fact mentioning Bemrose: William Bemrose, the founder of the shop there in Dawley, was a prominent Methodist local preacher. At the bottom of the High Street, you will reach the Captain Webb Memorial. Site 2B. Captain Webb, the Dawley man, was born in the town on January the 19th, 1848, was the first person to swim the English Channel unaided in 1875. He lost his life attempting to swim the Niagara Rapids on July the 24th, 1883. His memorial, erected from public subscription in 1909, originally stood in front of the Lord Hill Public House and had three gas lamps, later changed to a single electric lamp. The memorial has been removed a number of times in its history, but was finally refurbished and re-erected at its original location in 2009 on its 100th anniversary. It bears the inscription, "Nothing great is easy." At the time of the proposed erection of the memorial to Captain Webb, the school children in the Dawley area were asked to subscribe one penny. I well remember that my uncle, whenever he visited Dawley, as he passed by the memorial, he often said, "Well, I paid one penny towards that erection of that memorial." Another feature of the memorial, of course, were the small cast iron drinking cups, which were attached to the memorial with a chain. And if anyone felt thirsty, of course, as they passed by the memorial, they took up their cup of water. And this was, of course, a feature of many memorials in the area, with the drinking cups attached. Behind the Webb Memorial is the site of the Lord Hill Public House, which was one of the oldest pubs in Dawley. Site 2C. The Lord Hill Public House was named after one of Shropshire's most famous soldiers, and a commander in the Duke of Wellington's army, Lord Rowland Hill. The Lord Hill pub was licensed in about 1818 as an alehouse, open 7 days a week, and ironically once owned by William Tranter, a leading Methodist in the town. In 1901, it had four downstairs rooms, five upstairs, and customers were mostly ironworkers and miners. If you stand facing the pub, to your left is a terrace of houses in King Street. The first of those houses, number 16, was once occupied by Edith Pargeter. Site 2D. Edith Pargeter's house. This end terrace house is where she lived as a young woman when she worked at Bemrose's Chemists in Dawley High Street. The road which runs along King Street, past the Lord Hill, and thence down New Street, was the original turnpike road to Worcester. Site 2E. Turnpikes were essentially gates set across the roads to prevent passage until a toll had been paid. Particularly from 1700 to 1770, a network of turnpikes were established throughout Britain, a proportion of the toll being used to maintain the condition of the road. Although privately established, turnpike roads linked the major centres of population by highways and enabled rapid and efficient movement of people and goods across the kingdom. From the Captain Webb Memorial, if you walk to your right, you will see on your right a small Victorian pitch roof building in dark red brick. This was originally a chapel converted into the old library. Site 2F. The Old Library. This building was erected as a congregational chapel in 1866. It closed during 1880s, but the building was used in the 1890s as an undenominational mission. During the 20th century, It was utilized by the number of non-religious organizations, including Shropshire Library Service, which it took over the building in 1949. It was the first branch library in the county to have a full-time professionally staffed service. It closes the library in 1973 when the library moved to new premises in King Street. The old library has since served many uses as a building. From there, proceed down New Street. On your right is a large building with white painted frontage, the Old Town Hall. Site 2G. Originally built as a temperance hall in 1873, the building subsequently passed to Dorley Urban District Council, who adopted it as the town hall. The council let the building for public meetings, concerts and dances. It was a variety theatre with regular shows in the 1920s and 30s. After the Second World War, a nonconformist group used it, and in 1958 it held Roman Catholic services because of the lack of a Catholic church in the town. Cross the road and continue forward to the end of New Street to what is known as Portly Corner. At the end of the road, on your left-hand side, is Portly Colliery. Site 3A. Portly Colliery was owned by the Coverdell Company and wound coal and ironstone. The landscaping of the pit mound with Scots pine was part of a scheme in the 1930s for unemployed men who were paid for their work with food vouchers. In 2010, the Scots pines are being cut down as part of the Dorley Regeneration Scheme. Turn left at Portly Corner into Finger Road. You will come to a shop about 20 metres past the White Horse Public House. Opposite this shop was the site of the Finger Road Methodist Chapel. Site 3B. Finger Road Primitive Methodist Chapel survived for more than 100 years, from 1863 to 1976, when it was closed and subsequently demolished in order to widen the road. Continue along Finger Road until you reach the mini roundabout, where you should turn left into Hinksay Road. You will eventually come to a school on your left-hand side called Mount Gilbert Special School, formerly known as Langley School. Site 4A. A school board was set up in the Dorley area on the 16th of April 1875. It comprised 7 members, and one of the first schools to be opened was Langley School in 1878. It cost £3,000 and accommodated 600 pupils. It was renamed and redesignated in the late 20th century as Mount Gilbert Special School. Behind the school, the other side of the school play area, is the site of the former Langleyfield Blast Furnaces. Site 4B. Langleyfield Blast Furnaces were blown in 1824 and 1825 by George Bisham and Adam Wright, partners in the Langleyfield Company, before being sold to Beriah Botfield in 1857. Along with colliery and brickworks. The furnaces appear to have ceased production by the early 1870, and no trace of the ironworks survived in 1882. Continue along Hinksay Road. As you pass the school grounds, immediately to your left, there are examples of lumps of pale bluish stone, solidified slag, almost certainly waste from the former blast furnaces nearby. It was used also as a base material for roads and tracks. The coppice on your left-hand side is the site of the Langleyfield Colliery. Site 4C. On the left, behind Mount Gilbert School and stretching towards Hinksay, was Langleyfield Colliery. At least 10 shafts working at various times from 1803 to 1885 to produce coal and ironstone. Originally owned by the Coverdell Company, the colliery was sold to the Langleyfield Company in 1826, and subsequently bought by Beriah Botfield in 1856. After the breakup of the Botfield Empire, the colliery passed into the hands of the Abridge Company. Another 100 metres on, and just past an interesting pair of cottages, on the right-hand side of the road is a bungalow, and just before that are the remains of an old gas lamp and an air raid shelter in the field next to it. A further 200 metres on along the road you come to a junction with a lane to the left and right. This area is the site of the Jerry Rails, a line of the old tramway, Site 5A. The track crossing the Hinckley Road at this point is the route of a tramway, certainly in use in the early 19th century, presumably for the movement of raw materials and goods. The tramway was known locally as the Jerry Rails. The now demolished nearby public house, the White Hart, was referred to in the 1861 census as the Tom and Jerry, called locally the Jerry. The name was obviously associated with the tramway and other features in the area. 50 metres along the Hinckley Road and the railings of the site of the former Eveready battery factory come into view on the right-hand side. Cross over in order to take in the expanse of grass-covered emptiness where the factory once stood. Site 5B. Purpose-built in 1956, the Eveready battery factory had a relatively short life. It closed on the 25th of February 1994 and was demolished shortly afterwards. Most of the workers were women from Dorley and the surrounding area. Whilst facing the site, just to the left, was the site of the Hinckley Church of England Mission, Site 5C. In 1872, R.C. Wanstall, Vicar of Holy Trinity Church, 1870-88, and an evangelical who was concerned at the growing number of parishioners deserting the church to nonconformism, built a small brick mission chapel at Hinckley for the labourers there. A mission school for infants also opened, aided by a National Society grant, and probably closed when nearby Langley Board School started up in 1878. The mission chapel closed about 1969, and the building was used in 1980 as a social club for the adjacent Eveready factory. Some of the mission chapel masonry remains are kept in the grounds of Holy Trinity Church. Just beyond the mission site, at the end of the railings, was where Hinckley Village used to be. Nothing of that remains now. Site 5D. Hinckley Village originally comprised two rows of workers' houses, double row and single row, constructed in 1815 and 1833 respectively on land belonging to the Botfield family. Double row consisted of 48 back-to-back cottages and single row 21 cottages to the right of double row. Later, another row of 10 larger houses was built at right angles to the end of single row. It was called New Row or Ladies' Row and appears to have been provided solely for more senior and skilled members of the workforce. A further 100 metres on, as the road curves round, you will see in the middle distance a very prominent brick chimney, the surviving monument to the Sturchley blast furnace and chemical works. There are pleasant horse-grazed fields in the foreground and a line of dwellings on the left with fine views out across the countryside. Site 6A. Sturchley blast furnace and chemical works included four furnaces on site, blown in 1827, and the chemical works for the period 1886 to 1932. The land was leased by the Botfields from Isaac Hawkins Brown of Badger. A few metres further on, up the road on the left, you see a blue sign denoting the Silkin Way. Turn right here. A further 40 metres down the lane, you should turn right, again on the trail, a trail track which is signposted the Silkin Way. On entering the wood, if you look to your right, you can just make out behind the trees a brick wall. This was the site of the Sturchley Forge and Nail Factory. Site 6B. Land purchased from Lord Darlington in 1826 enabled William Botfield to construct a forge and rolling mills here 2 years later. Pig iron from the nearby Sturchley blast furnaces was transported to the forge for conversion into roll bars. In 1873, the trustees of Beriah Botfield sold the site to the Heybridge Company, who rebuilt the works and subsequently sold them to a Staffordshire company. The works only operated spasmodically according to demand before closure of the forge in the late 1890s and the rolling mill in 1904. In 1875, the Heybridge Company also built a nail factory on the site and sold it in the following year to one of his directors, John Maddock. He promptly moved his operations to Oaken Gates, but the nail factory continued to run under different ownership until closure in 1885. As you continue ahead, but still looking right, you will notice some tunnels in the wall structure. It isn't known what these were for, but supposition is that they may have been tramway tunnels or air shafts. Continue along this pleasant lane for 100 metres at the point at which it bears left. You should turn right, coming off the Silking Way and following the Dorley Heritage Trail signs. You'll come to a crossroad of paths with a small brick kiosk on your right. Turn left here and follow the assigned route. As you approach the Sturchley Pool car park, you'll see a path bearing off to the left hand and dropping away. Take this, following the waymark signs for the Heritage Trail. On the right of the car park is Sturchley Top Pool, site 6C. Follow the footpath on the extreme left of the car park. You will then come to Sturchley Bottom Pool, site 7A. The Sturchley pools were probably constructed as reservoirs to maintain the level of water in the adjacent Shropshire Canal. When you come to the end of the pool, you should turn right, keeping the canal to your left and the pool to your right. Follow the path between pool and canal till you come to a small T-junction, where you should turn left. Follow the path until you come to a slight bank in front of you. Continue on, up the bank, and down a few steps, leading to a tarmac path, the Silking Way. This is the route of the old railway. It is said that the railway was for the most part laid on the bed of the former canal, but at this point the railway line deviated because the canal followed the natural contours of the land, whilst the railway needed to follow a straighter line. Site 7B. In 1788, the ironmaster William Reynolds proposed an extension to the Shropshire Canal southwards from Donnington Wood to the River Severn. After parliamentary approval, work started in that year, following a route alongside the present-day Sturchley Pools, and after exiting from a tunnel at Southall, the canal split into eastern and western arms. The eastern arm, through Oaken Gates to near Aqueduct, was replaced by a railway in 1860, which followed, wherever possible, the line of the old canal. The western arm, from Aqueduct to Coburg Dale via Little Dorley, Wide Waters and across Doseley, terminating at Brierley Hill, declined in use between 1810 and 1858, when it was closed. Turn right along the tarmac path, following the waymarked signs for the Dorley Heritage Trail. Ahead of you, you will see a handsome road bridge, and about 40 metres before that, you will come to the site of the former Dorley and Sturchley Railway Station. Located on the right-hand edge of the path are the brick remains of the platform, and on the left-hand side was the goods yard. Site 7C. Sturchley Station opened in 1861 on the route of the London and North Western Railway, LNWR, branch line to Coalport. The station was renamed Dorley and Sturchley in 1923, before closing to passengers in 1952 and to freight 12 years later. Just before the bridge, there is a small track to the right, waymarked with the Dorley Heritage Trail disc. Take this until you meet the junction with Sturchley Lane. Pass through the gate. You will be turning right here. Carefully cross over Sturchley Lane and continue along the pavement for about 25 metres until you come to a clearing on the left, with Sturchley Wesleyan Chapel on the right of this. Turn left into this clearing. Site 8A. Built in 1840 for the Wesleyan Methodist worshippers of Sturchley, the chapel has the curiosity of actually being over the boundary in Dorley. This came about because the landowner, Beriah Botfield, would not sell land to the Methodist Nonconformist movement. With the chapel on your right, continue down the Waymark Lane ahead, passing through the gate. About 50 metres, you will see the Dorley Heritage Trail marker signing the track to the right. Take this. After about 200 metres, you will see some modern houses in front of you, and to the right, passing along the trail, immediately to the left of the brick wall of the garage of the end property, this brings you out onto a narrow track which you should continue on for about 400 metres to a point where you will see Southall Special School on your right, on the left-hand side of the site of the former Southall Colliery. Site 9A. Owned by the Coverdale Company, the colliery wound coal and ironstone. It was probably sunk in 1810 and closed in 1882. Continue for a little while until you come to the junction with Southall Road, taking care because this can be a very busy road. Cross over and turn left. Continue down the road until the junction with Southall, where you should turn right. On the left-hand side of the road, you will see a small track leading to the site of the former Dorley Castle Furnaces. Site 9B, Dorley Castle Furnaces. The furnaces were owned by the Coverdale Company, operating during the period 1810 to 1883. They supplied pig iron for the company's forges at Orsay. Slag from the operations in the 19th century obliterated all traces of the remains of the nearby historic Dorley Castle. Continue on the right-hand side of the road. Observe on the left-hand side of the road a Southall sign, behind which was the site of the former castle mine. Site 9C. So-called because of its proximity to the site of historic Dorley Castle. The mine was owned by the Coverdale Company and wound both coal and ironstone. It was one of a group of mines sunk by 1817 to exploit clod coal and was almost certainly closed by 1882. When you come to the junction with Hamilton Road, turn right here and walk to its end, which is the junction with Old Vicarage Road. If you look to your right, the line of fir trees on the horizon marks the site of the former parish colliery. Site 10A. This was another coal and ironstone colliery, owned by the Coverdale Company, closed probably by 1882. Cross the road and enter the grounds of Holy Trinity Church. Site 10B. The present-day Holy Trinity Church was built in 1845 on a site very close to that of an earlier church, which had been demolished because it was unsafe. Architecture evidence suggests there had been a chapel here since the 12th century, serving the community of Dorley, though only the Norman font and some 18th century monumental inscriptions survive from the earlier church. The present-day building was constructed of sandstone in the Perpendicular style, improved and enlarged in 1886. Follow the left-hand fork in the path around the church. You will notice on your right, by the wall of the church, some remains taken from the Hinckley Church of England Mission. As you pass these, look to your left across the grass of the graveyard, where you will see a set of black iron railings around the memorial stone of a grave. Take a little time to visit the site, which marks a particular mining tragedy in the history of Dorley, the Springwell Pit disaster. Site 10C. This is the communal grave of 8 young miners from Dorley, average age 19, the youngest being 15, who lost their lives in the Springwell Pit on the 6th of December 1872, when a triple link chain hauling them to the surface snapped. They plummeted 50 metres to their deaths. The funeral took place on the 10th of December at Holy Trinity Church, and it is said that 10,000 came to pay their respects, and that every shop in Dorley closed for the funeral. Rejoin the churchyard path from the Springwell Pit grave and leave at the bottom left exit. Immediately cross Holly Road and look slightly to your right, where there is a public footpath sign. Take this path, which follows the line of a former tramway. This was the line of a tramway from Horsay to Dawley Castle Furnaces, which the Coverdale Company constructed to readily connect the works of both places. Site 11A. Line of tramway from Horsay to Dawley Castle Furnaces. This was constructed by the Coverdale Company and connected its two sites at Horsay and Dawley Castle. The tramway, which we encounter in several places on the Editor's Trail, was constructed from 1810 by the Coverdale Company to connect its various industrial establishments together. Wrought iron, for example, was transported from the Castle Furnaces to the Horsay Forge and Rolling Mills. The tramway ran from Horsay, across the Branlee, over Pool Hill Bank, past Dawley Church to the Castle Furnaces. From there it ran along the side of the Dandy Pool, down through Lightmoor, and the Lightmoor Valley to Coverdale and the works there. Ahead of you are Castle Pools. You will come to a crossroad of paths with houses on the right-hand side. Continue straight on. On the left at this point is believed to be the site of the early fortified manor house referred to as Dawley Castle, the remains of which are thought to be buried under the spoil from Dawley Castle Mine. Site 11B. In 1316, the nobleman, William de Morton, was granted a license to fortify an existing manor house on this site. In time, it became known as Dawley Castle. During the English Civil War, the owner and widow, Mary Crompton, allowed the castle to be garrisoned by Royalist troops. But when in 1645, it was about to be captured by the parliamentarians, there is a suggestion that the castle was burnt by the Royalists. Whatever the truth, the castle was ordered by Parliament to be pulled down in 1648, and today there are no material remains. Although its exact location is unknown, the presence of Castle Pools and the remains of the early 19th century castle furnaces suggests the fortification was situated nearby. Ahead of you is Castle Pool on your left. Site 11C. Castle Pool was constructed as a feeder reservoir in the early 19th century for the nearby arm of the Shropshire Canal. Cross over the footbridge and two further bridges, finally turning right along the path waymarked Dawley Heritage Trail. At this point, you are in fact rejoining the South Telford Heritage Trail and the Coverdale arm of the Shropshire Canal. The trail follows the line of the canal with Dandy Pool on your right-hand side. Site 11D. Dandy Pool was another feeder reservoir for the Shropshire Canal, which was used by Dawley Castle Ironworks to transport pig iron to the forges at Coalbrookdale. The visible mound to your left is the site of the curiously named former Botany Bay Colliery. Site 11E. For a while it became the fashion to name collieries after far-flung, slightly exotic places. Botany Bay Colliery was one such, comprised of a group of deep mines sunk by the Coverdale Company in about 1810 to extract clod coal and ironstone for the nearby castle furnaces. The clod coal was exhausted by 1850, and the double coal, the thickest coal seam in the area, at about 2 metres, was exhausted by 1867. Continue on the path. At the end of the pool, take the left-hand path and pass through the car park. Taking the exit straight ahead of and following the waymarked signs out of the car park. Cross the tarmac road ahead of you and slightly to the right is the Wide Waters Pool. Site 12A. Wide Waters is said to be fed by a natural spring. It formed part of the Coverdale arm of the Shropshire Canal. It was widened by the Lightmoor Furnace Company as a reserve pool for their pools in Lightmoor, which created the power for the water wheel, which opened and closed the bellows that provided the blast of air into the furnaces. Take the path along the pool's left bank. The line of the old tramway goes off here at 45 degrees angle on your left to the Lightmoor Valley. Do not follow this path. Site 12B. This line of the tramway from Castle Furnaces via the Lightmoor Valley to Coverdale was built in 1810 and is a continuation of the tramway from Horsehay to Castle Furnaces. Continue along the path at the edge of the pool. The pool itself runs into a section of the Shropshire Canal. Site 12C. Built in the 18th century, this section of the Shropshire Canal was used by tugboats ferrying pig iron from the Castle Furnaces to the ironworks at Coverdale. As you approach the tugboat bridge, note that on your right, the canal widens out at this point. This was the basin where coal was loaded onto the tugboats from the nearby Dawley Parver Colliery. At this point, as a boy, I well remember that there was a tunnel which extended from the basin directly into the workings of the Dawley Parver Colliery, and it was possible to walk into this tunnel for about 30 or 40 yards. Obviously, this was put in to enable them to bring the coal out direct from the workings in the colliery directly onto the tugboats on the canal. Follow the path of the Shropshire Canal, keeping what is now the canal on your right-hand side. In front of you is a handsome brick and stone tugboat bridge. Site 12D. This bridge carried a tramway over the Coverdale arm of the Shropshire Canal from the Dawley Parver Colliery. It owes its name to the long, shallow metal vessels that carried coal, iron ore and limestone along the canal. The tugboats were 6 metres long, 2 metres wide, and able to carry 3 to 5 tons of cargo, which could be towed along the canal and then hauled onto rails at the incline plane at Briley Hill above Coverdale. Pass under the bridge and follow the path to the junction with Lightmoor Road. Turn right onto Lightmoor Road and continue walking carefully up the hill as there is no footpath. At the junction with Holly Road, cross over the left-hand side so that you have Little Dawley War Memorial immediately on your left. Site 13A, Little Dawley War Memorial, dedicated to the men of Little Dawley who lost their lives in World War I and II and later conflicts. As a matter of interest, this memorial is on the site of the former village pound, used up to the 19th century to secure stray animals. If you pause at the junction and look right, you can see Little Dawley Chapel, which has been converted into private apartments. Site 13B. The Wesleyan Methodist Chapel was built in 1837, replacing a small chapel west of the nearby Ivy Farm. The chapel of 1837 was known as the Big Penny. Its final service was held on the 4th of July 2004. It then underwent sympathetic development and conversion for residential use. As a point of interest, the trust deed of 1837 relating to this chapel shows of the 18 trustees, 13 of them were miners who signed the deed with their cross. Turn left at the junction into Holly Road and continue along this about 100 metres on. If you look to your right, you can see set back from the road a very old half-timbered house called Ivy Cottage. This is probably the oldest surviving house in the Dawley area. Site 13C, built in the 17th century, once the site of Ivy Farm, this lovely half-timbered building is believed to be the oldest surviving house in the Dawley area. It has been extended and renovated in recent years by current owners. Just past the cottage, still on the right-hand side of the road, was Topyard Colliery. Site 14A. Topyard Colliery was another large mining complex owned by the Coverdale Company. Continue along the road for about 400 metres from the cottage when you will come across some surviving rail lines embedded in the road where Gravel Lazo's Road meets Holly Road, a St Luke's Road. This was part of the Wellington to Craven Arms Railway. There used to be a rail crossing here, and to your right, behind the large wooden gate, is where Dolesley Halt used to be. Site 14B. In 1857, the Severn Junction Railway was opened between Ketley Junction and Horsay. In 1859, the line was leased to the Great Western Railway, and within 6 years, it had been extended to run from Wellington to Craven Arms. This line crossed Holly Road here at Dolesley Halt and was closed on the 21st of July 1962 to passenger traffic, but continued conveying girders from the Horsay Works until its closure on the 6th of July 1964. To the right of the halt was the site of the Springwell Pit. Site 14C. The Wellington and Severn Junction branch of the Great Western Railway crossed Holly Road here at Dolesley Halt. This closed on the 21st of July 1962 to passenger traffic, but continued conveying girders from the Horsay Works until its closure on the 6th of July 1964. Site 14D. Springwell Pit was one of the mines within the Top Yard Colliery Complex and the site of Dawley's infamous mining disaster. Here, in 1872, 8 young miners died when the chain they were being hauled to the surface on snapped and sent them to their deaths below. Walk down the hill towards Gravel Lazo's. About 80 metres on, you will come to Hollywell Lane on your right, which you should turn into and continue along. Where the lane begins to climb, you will see a bungalow off to the left called Spring Meadow. Just before this modern dwelling, on the left-hand side, is the site of the Hollywell Lane squatters' cottages, which were demolished in the 1970s. Site 15A, the site of Hollywell Lane squatter cottages. The first recorded squatter cottages were on the Earl of Craven's estate map of 1772, which showed 4 cottages on the site. Altogether, there were 29 cottages built by 1833. They were unique in their design, in that the labourers would often add to them in random manner as their families or needs grew. Thus there were some tiny cottages and some which had bedrooms over the front door of an adjacent cottage. The cottages were demolished by Telford Development Corporation in 1978, despite some local protest. More or less opposite the bungalow, on the right amongst the bushes, you can still see a small brick construction with a pipe coming out. This was the site of the Holy Well, from which the road took its name. Site 15B, the Holy Well. This was a well fed from a natural spring, which gave the road its name and provided the local residents with their water supply. Its name is a derivation of Hollowell. 40 metres on, past the well, there is a way marked turning to the right. Take this. It is called Woodlands Lane. At the top of the bank, keep to the left. Ignore a finger post off to the right. And you will see a section of low brick wall to your right. This was the canal bridge, under which ran the Coverdale arm of the Shropshire Canal. Site 16A. Section of the Shropshire Canal. This section of the canal was the first section to fall into disuse. In 1802, rails were laid on the towpath between Dolesley and the incline plane at Brierley Hill, which served to replace the line from Horsay to Coverdale via Jiggers Bank. The 1802 line was itself replaced in 1820 by the plateway from Horsay Transshipment Shed through Little Dawley and the Lightmoor Valley to Coburg Dale. On your left-hand side is the new development around the old Stocking Farm buildings. Site 16B, Stocking Farm. Stocking Farm was a medieval farm clearly visible on the Earl of Craven's estate map of 1772. Just past the bridge, on the right, is a small detached boarded-up building. It was another squatter's cottage. Site 16C, Squatter Cottage. The squatter cottage was built by Robert Bailey in May 1797, for which he was fined sixpence in the manor court. Continue along the lane when you will come to a road leading to the new housing development. Cross over this road and continue along Woodlands Lane. If you wish to divert for a few moments to see the Bath Spout, then you should do so a bit further on, where there is a waymarker indicating a public footpath to Doseley on the right. Take this and follow the track down the bank to the bottom with a clearing on the right. If you look in the bushes, you can see the original angle of iron pipe carrying the spring water to the Bath Spout, which, sadly, is no longer there. Site 17A, Bath Spout. Pipe running water was the exception rather than the rule in the more remote settlements. In this area of Doseley, a natural spring had been fed through a piece of angle iron placed in the bank, which then allowed the spring water to collect in a pool below. The Bath Spout was a mecca both for local people and for those living in other settlements around, such as Orsay, because of the purity of the spring water. A stand had been erected next to the spout on which to place a full bucket before it was transferred onto top of one's head. Climb back up the track to rejoin Woodlands Lane and the main trail. You will come to another road junction at the new Lightmoor Road to the Bourneville Trust housing development. Cross this and continue along Woodlands Lane. Cross yet another road and continue along Woodlands Lane. Site 17B, Woodlands House and Farm. Woodlands Farm was one of the oldest farms in the area. Woodlands House, built circa 1815, is a fine example of Georgian architecture that had had attentions made to it. It is said that there was once a connecting door between Woodlands House and Woodlands Farmhouse. As the lane bends to the right, on the left-hand side there is a field. Industrial buildings which can be seen at the end of this field are all that remain of the Colmore Brickworks. Site 17C. The Colmore Sanitary Pipe Company Limited, later the new Colmore Sanitary Pipe Company Limited, made sanitary pipes and fire bricks from 1908 to 1948. The company was then bought by Colmore Refractories Limited, who made bricks for the steel industry, before transferring their operations to the nearby Lightmoor Brickworks, which they had purchased in 1951. Continue along the lane, crossing the Lightmoor Green Road when you come to it, and continuing straight ahead. In front of you, on the right-hand side, is a striking building called Myford House, a private dwelling, originally built by R.G. Bailey, the then manager of the Horsay Company, but used as a residential care home for many years now. The lane bends round to the left, new houses on either side, and you should continue on this until it meets Wellington Road. Turn right along a footpath, 80 metres on, and you come to the neighbourhood of Myford. Look right at this point, and you'll see a row of cottages known as Myford Cottages, which were built for employees of the Horsay Works. Site 18A, Myford Cottages. These are a terrace of cottages built in 1903 by the Horsay Works for its employees. Continue along Wellington Road. You will pass a row of terrace houses on your right, one of which is where Edith Pargiter, the novelist Ellis Peters, was born. The house is easy to spot from the Cadfell house nameplate. Site 18B, birthplace of Edith Pargiter. This is where Edith Pargiter, the novelist Ellis Peters, was brought up, having lived here from her birth in 1913. It is from here that she made the return journey twice daily into Dorley to attend Dawley National School, as she used to come home at lunchtimes to eat. Further on, across the road, on the left-hand side, is the Forester's Arms, formerly known as the Craven Arms. Site 18C. The Forester's Arms public house was originally named the Craven Arms after the Lord of the Manor, the Earl of Craven. But when Lord Forester purchased the public house, the name was changed to the Forester's Arms. At the small roundabout ahead of you, continue over into Bridge Road. 150 metres further on, you come to a road junction. At this point, look to your left. In the middle distance, on the left-hand side of the Wellington Road, is all substantial building, Morton Coppice Chapel, which was renovated in 2008. Site 18D, Morton Coppice Chapel. This handsome yellow and blue brick Victorian chapel was built in 1858 to serve four primitive Methodist cottage meetings, Horsay Potteries, Woodhouse Lane, Stony Hill and Colmore. However, in 1968, the Horsay Wesleyan Chapel, located in Spring Village, closed, and its congregation joined with the Morton Coppice congregation. Money raised from the Heritage Lottery and the Methodist Society was used to fully renovate the building in 2007. It then went on to celebrate its 150th anniversary the following year. Continue walking along the pavement on the right-hand side of Bridge Road. After another 100 metres, you will see on the left-hand side Horsay Village Hall. This used to be Horsay Works Canteen. Site 19A. On the right-hand side, just opposite the village hall, and over the wall, in the dip, was the site of the Horsay Ironworks Lower Furnace Pool. Site 19B, Lower Furnace Pool and current line of Horsay Brook. Lower Furnace Pool was used to ensure that the furnaces continued to run even during the dry summer months. Water was pumped from the lower pool to the primary upper pool, Horsay Pool, to maintain its level and therefore power the blast furnaces. The large red brick building which you are passing on the right is all that remains of the once extensive Horsay Ironworks. Site 19C, Horsay Works. In 1754, Abraham Darby II first leased, later the Coverdale Company purchased, Horsay Farm from R.A. Slaney to build blast furnaces. The first furnace was blown in 1755, the second in 1757, and in 1781 the forge was built and the rolling mill was added in 1790. By 1817 there were three furnaces, two forges, two rolling mills and a slitting mill on the site. In 1886 the site was bought by the Simpson family, who established the Horsay Company Limited and further developed the site. In the 1960s it changed hands again a number of times as heavy industry started declining in Britain. The works closed in 1983, most of the buildings were demolished and a new housing estate was erected on the land. As you pass the works buildings, cross over the road, walking towards Horsay Pool. This used to be the ironworks upper furnace pool. Just before the pool, on your left-hand side, is a row of cottages. The one on the right of the archway was once Ball's Sweet Shop. Site 19D, Ball's Sweet Shop. The sweet shop was owned by Joseph Ball, the great-nephew of William Ball, the Shropshire giant, who was born in 1795 and died in 1852. He was given the title the Shropshire Giant because at the height of 5'9½" he weighed over 40 stone and was said to be able to button three men into his waistcoats. Bordering the pool on the left-hand side are the first homes that the Darbys built for their workers in Horsay in the 1750s. Old Row, now known as Pool View. Site 19E, Old Row. Old Row, originally called Long Row, is a terrace of 25 one-and-a-half-story houses, now known as Pool View. These houses were first built in Orsay by the Coverdale Company for their employees. They were built in three stages. The first, starting soon after the first furnace was blown in at Orsay, in the mid-1750s. Further along the road is New Row, originally called Upper Row, built in the 1830s for workers by the Coverdale Company. Site 19F, New Row. This row of terraced cottages was built by the Coverdale Company in the 1830s, originally named Upper Row. They were built for principal workers at the company. They were built with bricks composed of pennies and ironstone waste made at the Brandley Brickyard. Continue along the footpath with the wall of the pool immediately to your left, and then past the pool. Site 19G, Orsay Pool. This was created as a reservoir to drive hydraulic equipment at the works. On the left-hand side, you will come to Telford Steam Trust Engine Shed, which was formerly the Orsay Works Transshipment Shed. Site 19H, Transshipment Shed. This was built 1857 by the Coverdale Company to serve as a transfer shed between their plateways and the newly arrived Wellington and Severn Junction Railway. One of the main functions seems to be the transshipment of limestone from Wenlock Edge for use at Horsay and Dawley Castle furnaces. It looks like the collapse of the iron trade signalled a decline in the use of the shed. It appears that this use was finished by the turn of the century. By this time the works had been sold and the Orsay Company formed. A section of plateway can still be seen protruding from one end of the building that is used today as the engine shed by the Telford Steam Trust, who took over the building in 1975, returning it to a loco shed and workshop. Continue along the footpath. As you go over the railway bridge of the Wellington to Craven Arms line, look down to your left and you'll see the line, station platform and remains of where the former Horsay and Dawley station used to be. Site 20A, Horsay and Dawley station. The line from Ketley Junction to Horsay was opened in 1857 by the Wellington and Severn Junction Railway. In 1861, the Wellington and Severn Junction Railway was leased for operation by the Great Western Railway, and Orsay and Dawley Station was built. Within 6 years, the line had extended from Wellington to Craven Arms. During the late 19th and early 20th century, the station was very active, with 10 sidings and works access lines with a capacity of over 200 wagons, starting the first leg of a journey, taking bridges fabricated at the works to all parts of the globe. It fell as a victim of the beaching the chairman of British Rail cuts in 1962, when its railway passenger service ceased and goods ceased to be transported on the line in 1964. However, a small section of the line, from Horsay to Lightmoor Junction, was leased by Adamson Alliance from British Rail to carry cranes and girders made at the Orsay Works. The last freight to be carried on the line was in May 1979. Further along the pavement, you will pass the station public house, and 30 metres further on, you will come to a high wall on your left-hand side. Halfway along this wall, by the lamppost, stand with your back to the wall and look out towards the power station chimney in the distance. In the foreground, in line with the chimney, 200 metres in front of you, was the site of the Horsay Potteries, which had been demolished, but of particular note architecturally and historically, was the roundhouse. Site 20B. Horsay Potteries and Roundhouse. The Coverdale Company established a brickworks at Horsay by 1756, to which they added in the 1790s an industrial pottery to make ceramics for the Wright and Jesson process of making wrought iron. There were a range of buildings in the pottery by 1797, which included a conical kiln. By 1801, the potteries had been leased by the Coverdale Company to Edward Thursfield, and they were recorded as still in operation in 1817, but were closed and converted into 24 separate dwellings by 1843, including the kiln, which had been converted into the roundhouse. This in time became a well-known landmark in the Dorley area. The 1935 Electoral Register lists 27 dwellings and households in the potteries. All the original buildings, including the roundhouse, were emptied by 1962, with its last occupant leaving by 1965. The properties were eventually demolished by 1970. Directly behind the Horsehay potteries used to be the site of the very large spoil mound known as the Cinder Hill. Site 20C, Cinder Hill. The Cinder Hill was a well-known landmark of the area, standing over 30 metres high and second in height only to the Wrekin. It comprised of slag generated from the Coverdale Company's furnaces at Horsehay. It was used by the Great Western Railway, which ran a track from the Horsehay sidings directly into the Cinder Hill, where slag was removed to be used as ballast for the railway tracks right up until just before the Second World War. At this time it was used for road building and for glass manufacture. Older rockeries and walls of local residence gardens often contained lumps of attractive furnace slag. After another 10 metres, you will pass a fine house of note on your left called Prospect House. As you pass this, look across the road to the right. At the end of the section of galvanised metal fencing, there was a line of a further section of old tramway. Site 21A, Line of Tramway. This part of the section of tramway, going from the transshipment shed at Horsehay to Dorley Castle Furnaces via Pool Hill Bank, past Holy Trinity Church to Dorley Castle Furnaces. Continue on the pavement for a few more metres. On the right-hand side of the road, just before the Burntree Vehicle Rental Depot, used to be the site of Day's Automatic Waste Water Closet and Sanitary Pipe Syndicate Company Limited. Site 21B, Day's Automatic Waste Water Closet and Sanitary Pipe Syndicate Company Limited. Just about the most extraordinary name for a company you might find. It was set up on the site of the Brandley Brickworks, which used to make white bricks on the site. This site in turn has been owned by the Coverdale Company, who, it is sometimes forgotten, required enormous quantities of bricks for their iron-making enterprise and for workers' housing. The Sanitary Pipe Syndicate erected its new premises on the site in 1882 and made drain pipes and fire bricks here. It remained open until about 1915. When you are more or less opposite the Burntree Vehicle Rental Depot, cross the road with care and take the footpath down through the underpass. This brings you out into Station Road, Dorley. Continue along Station Road until you come to a row of houses on your right. Set in the brickwork, under the eaves of the first pair of semi-detached houses, is an interesting circular stone plaque which was once the foundation stone of Brandley Methodist New Connection Chapel, which had previously stood on that site. Site 22, Brandley New Connection Methodist Chapel. The Brandley Chapel stood at the top of the Brandley Bank on Station Road, built by the Revivalists or Winfieldites and opened in 1827. 2 years later, the society and circuit of which it was part were accepted within the Methodist New Connection movement. They then merged with the Methodist Free Church in 1907 to become the United Methodist Church. The building was demolished in the mid-1930s, but the commemorative plaque was recited, if in fact reversed, on the front wall of the first semi-detached house in Station Road on the original chapel site. On it is marked the date the houses were erected, 1936. Continue along Station Road until you pass the Royal British Legion on your right-hand side and reach the car park which marks the end of the trail.